Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott.
And this is City on a Hill podcast. I want to welcome you back. For the past couple of weeks, we have been talking about basically every kind of government. We've talked about democracy and oligarchy and democracy and tyranny and monarchy and aristocracy and constitutional government. All the things maybe you learned in high school, probably didn't learn in high school, frankly. That's probably more than you were expecting to know. And then we talked more specifically last time about American government. And Scott quickly raised his hand towards the end of that discussion and said, we left one out. So we want to add, we're going to do the addendum and add the last one that we left out.
I was going to say, is that all of the kinds of governments? Did we talk about all of them?
Well, we talked about spectrum. If they're
We did all on a spectrum. We did hit a spectrum. That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the whole idea that God rules and that he is in charge or is king, that's one we left out, where God is the head of the nation.
And for those wanting to write the word down, that'd be a theocracy, right, Scott?
What's that?
A theocracy, where
yes.
God rules.
Yep. And the interesting thing about that, and I think the reason why we have to talk about it, is because that's what Israel experienced in the Old Testament. And that's what essentially was established on Sinai. And just before we started, you were telling me about how they decided governmental issues in ancient Israel.
Yeah, and we have a question about this. What do we do? And Moses would say, I don't know. walk in and go talk with God. And God would say, do this or do that. I just read the one where the sons of Korah said, well, we're all priests too. We should be listened to. All right, let's talk to God about it. And it turned out, no, we don't listen to the sons of Korah. Not at all.
And we swallow them up in a big hole.
Yep.
That happens in theocracies, I suppose you could say. But the reason I think that we've got to talk about it is because there isn't a lot to go on in like the New Testament. How does a New Testament Christian relate to the government? We hit those verses earlier, and you know, there were maybe 10 that were related or that were applicable. But when you go to the Old Testament, oh, you've got all kinds of nationalistic things, and you've got God at the center of all the nationalistic things. And then you just go straight there, maybe as a Christian, and you say, that's what we need here. When you do that, then you have a pretty big problem, actually. Because it doesn't come straight across that way. Mm. And so...
And to be fair, what you're talking about, to describe that need, there's a good desire there. We want people to know God and follow God. And there seemed to be a way to organize that to some good outcome, some not in the Old Testament. But to desire that people follow God is a good desire. And if that were true all over the place, that's I see where it tugs on people's hearts. They want that for people.
Yeah, and it's good for people.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for people to submit to God, to do things God's way, and so it's good for people. And we want God's reputation to be enhanced, and so we're gonna try and apply the scriptures to our everyday relationship with government. And we go to the Old Testament. And I mean, there are you know, there are several things, but the one that comes to me probably most frequently is 2 Chronicles 7:14, which says, if my people, which are called by my name, humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. And that is frequently used as a call for a prayer meeting for our nation, or for an election, or for some major piece of legislation or something. And we just jump there and equate my people with Americans and healing their land with America. And I'm pretty sure that just doesn't come straight across. So, you know, what would, you know, how would we navigate that, I guess, is the question. And the simple way to say it is that the people of Israel, and especially in the time that you were talking about, and really as long as there was a kingdom, they were in a covenantal relationship with God. God had taken initiative and had established a relationship with them that, you know, we would call a covenant. And so they were obligated to God. God was obligated to them by virtue of this covenant. And so to be my people, I mean, that really is how God would describe them. They are my people, and my people are related to me in covenant, is how God would probably describe it. And the reality is, Israel had that, and we don't have that as America. They had that, and granted, they did not do very well with it. And so after a period of years, they reaped the consequences of their disobedience to the covenant, and they were exiled out of their land into Syria and Babylon. And that is that's kind of the way that covenant worked, is that there was an agreement between them and God about how they would live and about how they would relate to God. And if they keep it, it's good. If they don't keep it, it's bad. In fact, just this morning I was reading my Bible time. I mean, this is fabulous. This is so, so great. It's from Deuteronomy chapter 28. And this is exactly what we would want, I think, for, you know, our country, right? And it reads like this. I mean, it's worth reading the whole thing because it just sounds so happy.
I'm ready for it.
It says, if you faithfully obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you. And if you obey the voice of the Lord your God, blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the field, blessed shall be the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your herds and the young of your flock. Blessed be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, blessed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will cause your enemies to rise against you, to be defeated before you. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. The Lord will command the blessing on you in your barns and in all that you undertake, and he will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. The Lord will establish you as people holy to himself, as he has sworn to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. And all the peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by my name, and they shall be afraid of you. And the Lord will make you abound in prosperity in the fruit of your womb, and in the fruit of your livestock, and the fruit of your ground, within the land the Lord swore to your fathers to give you. The Lord will open to you his good treasury, the heavens, to give the rain to your land and its seasons, and to bless all the work of your hands. And you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And the Lord will make you the head and not the tail. And you shall go up and not down, if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, being careful to do them. And if you do not turn aside from any of the words that I command you today, to the right hand or to the left, to go after other gods to serve them. And I mean, who wouldn't want that, right?
Sounds glorious.
That's, yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's economic prosperity, it's relational prosperity, it's family prosperity, it's everything.
There's foreign policy, you know, prosperity there, interaction with other nations, everything's going well.
It's the American dream, really, in some regard. And what follows right after that is, but if you don't, then you'll be the tail and not the head. You'll go down and not up. And just the reverse of all these things. And so it is really tempting, I think, to go and say, let's do that. Let's be that. And we'll see that kind of prosperity here in America. And the reality is that was based not on being good, but on a covenant relationship and an agreement they had with God. In fact, the very next verse, Deuteronomy 29:1, says, "These are the words of the covenant that the Lord commanded Moses to make with the people of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant that he had made with them at Horeb." And so there is this revisiting of the covenant that God made with Israel. And these blessings and cursings are the result of God's special relationship with Israel, in which he will bless them for their obedience and curse them for their disobedience. And so, again, it's tempting to say that's what I want, therefore I'll go there and claim this for our country. And it's hard for me to like overstate, I think, the problem, because what that does is that makes me think that the morality of our country then is the basis upon which God will bless us. And that isn't exactly true. And you can think of it this way, I think. It isn't about morality. It's about that covenant. It's that God has pledged himself to be the God of Israel. And God has not pledged himself to be our God. And America does not have the right to be considered God's people in the same way that Israel did, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we probably get crosswise with that when we, as Christian citizens of America, we start saying, I have a covenant relationship with God, then the people I am connected to in different ways, not spiritual ways, not family of God type ways, if I'm connected to them, there maybe there's some connection there. Maybe there's some cross applicability, and I want my connection with my God to be spread throughout my nation's connection so that that thing is cross applicable, which is just not the relationship we have with God as a country, though we have it as a people of God in the church.
But like you said earlier, that's really a good desire, no doubt. So, I mean, this is well-intentioned, but I think gets us off on the wrong foot and then really muddies the water with respect to what we've talked about before with America being a Christian country. I mean, we're assuming that. It's sort of a tacit implication that somehow our Christianity would garner God's favor. And so, I mean, having said that, I think that's one of the things that concerns me about it. I think the other thing that it does is that it disregards the way that God relates to people. God relates to people through a covenant, through his initiative to make covenant with people. He did that with Israel. He did that on, you know, Mount Horeb. He did it with David. And he did it again with what Jeremiah called the new covenant. And what Jesus said, you know, and we quote this kind of monthly when we celebrate the Lord's Supper, this is the new covenant in my blood. The way that you enter covenant relationship with God now is not nationally, but by faith in a crucified and risen Savior. And you can't ignore that, the way that God establishes his covenant now, and hope that you can earn his favor some other way. And that's it's really tricky. And I think it's really deceptive to, for us, I mean, it just, we fall into it all the time. Mm. I mean, in some respect, that's the error of Job's friends, is they thought that, you know, if you behave well, God will treat you well. If you behave badly, God will treat you badly. And so they argued that for, you know, pages and pages in the book of Job. And, you know, the final evaluation of it by God was they spoke of me what wasn't right. And so I think we have to be really careful about doing that. But one of the ways we do it is by sort of claiming these covenant privileges to which we have no right. Mm. I could say it that way, I suppose.
Yeah, and you're talking about trying to relate with God in the wrong way. And I also think it takes something small that we could point to as a good, namely the country we live in, and tries to make it do more than it is even designed to do. If we can get connected to God through Jesus, why would we try to use other means to do that, bending a nation that direction or something? There's better means of doing that. I can get connected to God through Jesus.
Well, there's one means of doing that.
Yes, yes. To be explicit, yeah. Everyone, there is a sole means of doing that.
Yeah, and it's really what Jesus means. He said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And that's that is a different, you know, avenue to the relationship with God than they enjoyed in the Old Testament. And so what this does, though, is this puts us in, you know, kind of back where we have been this whole time. It puts the church in exile, and the church itself is then in covenant with God because of this new covenant where God has taken out the heart of stone and given a heart of flesh and has put his spirit within those who have repented and trusted Jesus. They have entered the kingdom of God and not the kingdom of this world. And so we can't mix those up in the same way that we've mixed this up before. And we have to kind of stay clear of that and relate to God through the church, not nationalistically.
Yeah, that's good. And I just wasn't planning on this, but I just had lunch with a friend today, and we were talking about politics to some degree, and talking about how there's so much hate out there. There's so much outrage out there. How do we fix that problem? And we were talking about it in a political context and a national context. And I just said, you know what? My answer to that is the gospel. I belong to a God that takes hard hearts and makes soft hearts. And that's the only way to do this. Otherwise, you're just going to bend hate's different directions. You're not going to change their affections. And that's the story that actually mends these things.
And so if you think in terms of effort, or you think in terms of, okay, what am I going to do for the sake of morality, or for the sake of the good of the city, or the sake of the good of the country, I am going to invest spreading the gospel, because the gospel is what will change hearts, and changing hearts is what will ultimately make a difference in, you know, the level of morality. And that's, I think that's some of what, you know, our founders were assuming, or were hoping. They were hoping, I think, to have a moral people and have this government be able to govern them. But they left out the gospel. And that is, I think, really what the church has that the world doesn't have. And so I would say, if we invest our energy and time and affection toward the church, toward the gospel, toward what we are told in the scripture does change people and does connect people to God, then I think we're we're going to be closer to a, you know, covenantal relationship, but it just won't be national. I think the only other thing that I am, thinking about here is that this, there's pressure on the church to come just really close. And it's hard to navigate this. Do you have, prayer meetings for the government? Do you pray for religious leaders? Do you have flags all over the sanctuary in on Memorial Day or 4th of July weekend or whatever? And I think it's really important, at least for me as a pastor, to, clearly communicate that the hope of the world is in Jesus. And the hope for America is in Jesus, and what we're doing in the church is the hope for the world. And again, it just sets us off on a different path. Now, I'm trying to think about, okay, what would people say and how would they push back on this? One of the ways they'd push back would be they'd pull another Old Testament verse, Proverbs 14:34, and say, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And they would say, therefore, we have to establish righteousness in America. And, I, in some respect, agree with that. I sure think that Proverbs 14:34 is true. It was written, again, to the nation of Israel. It is their nation to which it refers. This righteousness is being rightly related to God, which you do through a covenant relationship through Jesus. This is not morality exalts a nation, it's righteousness exalts a nation. And so relating to God through Jesus is how you are established as righteous. And yes, that would exalt a nation. And sin is a reproach to any people. That is true, and that is that any people there is broader than, of course, the nation of Israel. And the reality is that good is good for humans. when people are good and there's goodness, people thrive. And it doesn't matter what nation you're in, or when you live God's way, things go better. And I think there is a sense in which that's true, whether you're in Russia or Georgia or Oregon or Israel. And that's just the way that God has established human life to function. And so when there's sin or evil, it is problematic for people. And that's why we have laws. I mean, in some respect, trying to curb the worst of humanity so that there is at least a governor right on the inclination to sin and to become a reproach. So it's not that that is untrue. It's just that that's not the way you establish the righteousness and the right relationship with God. I don't know if you have anything to
two things, I think. One, we're talking about righteousness or living in God's way, which is just the book of Proverbs writ large. There's mm-hmm. ways to live in this world that are aligning with God's design. And the cool thing, and I think it's notable, the cool thing about the country we live in or the state we live in or the city we live in, if enough of our neighbors all of a sudden have changed hearts, our system almost by necessity will be a changed system because we all participate in it. And I can't go top down and legislate heart change, but if there's heart change, it will necessarily create legislative change or city change or whatever. And I'm not saying you get a little bit of pocket in West Lynn, you're going to change the whole country, but you could change West Lynn and you could change Lake Oswego, you could change the suburbs or whatever, wherever you live. I think that's really cool and something to lean into because I can love my neighbors and that will actually, one, it changes my relationship. It changes my neighbor's relationship with God if they get connected to Jesus. and because of this, the place they live, my neighbor can love their neighbors more and can bend the system they have towards loving their neighbors, which is what we talked about last time. Yeah. I think secondly, we're talking about theocracy. We're talking about God being the one that governs, and that has been inaugurated. Jesus died on a cross as a king, and we're working through that in Matthew right now as a church, and that is pointing towards a day when Jesus will reign as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and the government will be on his shoulders, and there will be a theocracy, totally and completely, and there won't be any question about who is ruling and who is reigning. And in the meantime, we Christians, we members of the church are ambassadors of that kingdom. And the USA is not an ambassador of that kingdom. The USA is not a theocracy or even a caretaker government waiting for that kingdom. But the church is a group of ambassadors that proclaim that kingdom. And I think that's the, because we live in these overlapping spheres, it's easy to get them crosswise, but realizing that's where we're aiming, and which I think is why we have the desire in our hearts too. That's where we're going. Mm-hmm. Is Jesus on a throne.
That's really fabulous. I would love that to be the last word, but there are a couple of things you made me think of. That's really good. And one of them is just where we really get this cross, you know, we get ourselves wrapped in a knot and crosswise about this very thing. So as you were talking about that, I was just thinking about, okay, should the Ten Commandments be in front of our courtrooms? You know, and how important is that? Well, there is a sense in which the you know, the Ten Commandments and the Law of Moses is a very early and formative judicial precedent, really. And I think there's good reason to have it there. Having the, you know, essentially the qualifications or the requirements of the covenant that God made with Israel as part of our system, because God doesn't have that covenant with us, is a little bit, you know, it's a little bit sideways. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the, you know, it was a very important law and judicial system, and it has a place. It doesn't have a, you know, Christian place or a required place or a place that we go to the wall for, but it has a place. You know, same thing in some respect with prayer in schools or whatever other, you know, intersection these two things have. I was privileged. I mean, this is really something. I memorized Psalm 23 and Psalm 100 in public school when I was a boy. And that was really something. It was also really something that it was in a all-white school in Montgomery, Alabama. And so there was just this, you know, really sort of sideways kind of religion that was partly good and partly not good. And I think that we have to say, you know, the prayer in schools or the Bible in school or whatever it is, that is a different sphere, and we're not, that school is not going to relate to God the way the church does. Or not relate to God by means of this new covenant, which will establish their righteousness. And that's not the way that works. And so it's just really easy for us to say, oh, the Christian thing is prayer in schools. The Christian thing is the Ten Commandments in the courtroom. And that's not exactly it. And one other thing is there is a place for Christians or God's people, God's covenant people, calling secular rulers to account, you know, with regard to righteousness and justice and concern for the poor. And there, I mean, we relate to it as outsiders, not trying to get them to bend to our will. But I mean, you see that with Daniel, and Nebuchadnezzar was out there eating grass because he was, you know, kind of goofed up the way that a king relates to God. You see that with some of the other prophets, they would speak oracles against people who were not God's people, because those people had violated God's justice. And there is a place for that that is different than trying to impose God's rule onto our country, I guess. And I don't exactly have that all dialed in all honesty. I don't have the, how far do you go and in to what line do you get to? I don't know that, but I think there is a place for it that is not trying to claim that we are the covenant people of God. It isn't that. Mm-hmm. I know it's not that. It's still some other voice as an outsider speaking in.
Right.
Or as a minority speaking into the majority, something like that.
Well, there's definitely a future content. So we can talk about that on a future podcast, and we'll keep this conversation going. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. We're starting to see some ratings. We're starting to see some 5-star reviews. And every time those things happen, it makes it easier to search for us. And we want people to be able to hear this, because we know there's a lot of confusing stuff out there, and we hope we can be something that cuts through that and can be helpful for people. So if it is helpful, do those things, share it with a friend, shoot them a text, send them something on Facebook and say, hey, check this out. And if you do have questions, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com. And we look forward to the next conversation.
Let's have a go at it.
Let's have a go. I like that. Are you recording?
I am now.